Bhajan Rahasya class. We're discussing this Saptayam Sadhana Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation of Vipralamba Bhajan at the level of prema. Worship of Krishna at the level of prema, it's called prema bhajan. There's bhajan at the level of sadhana, of the sadhaka, and there's bhajan at the level of prema. There's bhava, bhajan at the level of bhava, and bhajan at the level of prema. We actually were reading yesterday, we were reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya was in the same mood of the gopis at Kurukshetra. As the gopis, when they met Krishna at Kurukshetra after 50 years, he of course went to Mathura and Dwarka, then they met him later there. And they were saying, we want to bring you back to Vrindavan. You're the same Krishna, we're the same gopis, but you're dressed differently. You're dressed in Rajvesh, surrounded by Hathi and Gora, horses and elephants and chariots and so many Senapatis. But we want to see you with Murli Vadan, with a Murli in your hand, and a Pagri, and more Mukut, a peacock feather in your hair. And we want to see you on the banks of the Yamuna, in the Brajavan. And we want to dance with you there. That's the Krishna we want. So please come with us and come with us back to Vrindavan. So we were hearing about that yesterday. The indication we get from these verses in this chapter on Vipralamba Bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the indication we get that these particular chapters of the 10th canto are very important for Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti because they nourish this mood of separation, which is so much prevalent and magnified in the hearts and lives of the Braja Gopis. So we can take the, we can understand that these chapters that describe separation, which we mentioned, the Gopi Geet and Veno Geet, Pranaya Geet, Yugal Geet, Brahmar Geet, and this is and Viraha Geet. These are the chapters, specific chapters that deal with separation. But this chapter 82 of the 10th canto, Krishna meets the residents of Vrindavan at Kurukshetra. This chapter 82. It's not described as a particular geet. Viraha geet and Veno geet and Brahmar geet. They have these names. Veno geet. But in this chapter, as we've been hearing, there's lots of description of this particular type of separation that we're discussing, which is pravas, pravasa rag, or pravas. There's prem vaichitya man, purvarag, prem vaichitya man, and pravasa rag, or sudur, sudur, pravasa rag. This is a type of loving attachment and separation, vipralamba or viraha, which occurs due to the lover being separated from the beloved by a great distance, even countries apart. You're in India and your beloved is in America. That's called sudur pravas. Pravas. They're living or residing in a place very far, sudur, very, very far away. And pravas rag is when you're separated from your lover by a short distance. You're in Rohini and your lover is in Noida. Or you're in Chanakpuri and your lover is in Connaught Place. You follow? There is this in Delhi. These are sections of Delhi. So there's some distance, but not much. Pravas. But sudur pravas is when you're in Vrindavan and your lover is in Kurukshetra or in Dwarka. And very intense. That distance, that space, that time, that mood, that place, it creates very intense mood and feelings of separation in the hearts of the lovers. These verses Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing are from this 82nd chapter. And this is text number 40, 1082-40. This describes Krishna's conversations with the gopis that occurred in a solitary place. Krishna's intimate talks to the Braja gopis, his sweet words to the Braja gopis. If you read chapter 82, you'll see that when Krishna went to Kurukshetra, first he greeted his mother and father and his friends. And the gopis were standing a little distance, casting glances, sidelong glances at him. And he was talking to his mother, looking at them, talking to his friends, looking at them. Like, And they were waiting, and he was waiting because the main people, the main devotees to Krishna wanted to meet at Kurukshetra were, of course, the gopis. You can imagine if you're in a public setting somewhere, or you're in some party somewhere, and your mother's there, and your mother-in-law's there, and you're there, and your cousins are there, and so many people are there. But one of your particular cousins or distant cousins, you have some like interest in them. Or maybe it's your cousin's girlfriend. And it's a family, Indian family party. There's many people there. So everyone's saying hello, hello, and it's very official and formal. But you see that sister, you see that girlfriend of your cousin, and this is a girl that you're a little bit interested in meeting. And so you're talking to different people, your aunt and your grandmother, and you're looking at that sister or that friend of your cousin, because you're thinking, I have to find the opportunity to get with this person and talk to her, but I have to wade through all these other people, talk to my grandmother, talk to my Masi and my mama and papa and whatever, all these Jiju, this, that, the other thing. But finally, that moment comes. This is what happened at Kurukshetra. Krishna was just waiting, counting the minutes, counting the time, when and where he'll meet with the gopis. So now he's finally having that conversation. Bhagavamstas tata bhuta vivikta upasangataha ashlishya namayam prishtva prahasan idam abravit. When Krishna saw the gopis had attained oneness, tadatmya, with him, he went with them to a secluded place in Kurukshetra. After embracing them to his heart, he inquired about their well-being. He laughed and spoke as follows. Vivikte laya gopi alingya, prema marma katakaya, Krishna gopi priti mahashira tati, dekhiya ascharya hai. Actually, this is the Bengali version of the same verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakura. When Krishna heard Sri Radha's anguished talks of separation, he remembered his unlimited and complete love for the Brijvasis, and he became very restless. Considering himself indebted to the Brijvasis, he began to console them by addressing Sri Radha. O Priyatam, accept the following as true. Please understand what I'm about to tell you. It's really completely true. I'm always remembering you, and I'm burning day and night in the fire of separation from you. No one really knows the extent of my unbearable pain. The Brijvasis, my parents, and the Sakas, they're my very pran, they're my life. But among all of them, you gopis are directly, you're Sakshat pran, you're directly my life. And you, Radhika, you're the very life of my life. What more can I say? I am always subservient to your unconditional love. My misfortune is very strong. I cannot do anything about it. This misfortune has separated me from you, keeping me in a distant country. It is true that the beloved cannot remain alive without the association of the lover, and that the lover cannot remain without the beloved, but neither will die, because each is thinking, if I die, his condition will be of separation will be the same as mine. Aho, the faithful beloved and a truly affectionate lover think of each other's welfare even in separation. They never think of their own sorrows and sufferings, but always they want their beloved to be happy. This kind of loving couple meet each other again very quickly. So Krishna is saying that this is the actual nature of intense, pure love between the lover and beloved, that the love is so powerful and strong that if the lovers are separated, they cannot live. The intensity, the pain of the sorrow and the affliction of separation will be so great that they'll give up their lives. Oh, I can't live. But then they think, From my side, I can't live better. I have to. I'll give up my life. I'll stop eating. I'll stop eating. I'll stop drinking. I won't drink any water, and I won't eat. So obviously, you'll die very soon. If you don't drink any water and don't eat, you'll die very soon, within 1 week, maximum. But then they think, because of the intensity of love, love will make them think, but if I do that, if I die, which is my only recourse, and is to escape this horrible pain of separation from my beloved, but if I do die, pure love will make them think, then what will happen to my beloved? Because they're also feeling the same as me. They're also burning and tormented by the fire of separation. And they also want to give up their lives. But if I give up my life, and by chance they come and they find me, or we reunite, or they try to find me and they find out the news that I'm dead, then that would be so painful. And I'm not there to serve them and give them happiness. So I can't give up my life. I have to remain alive with the hope that I may again reunite with my beloved to give him pleasure again and give him happiness again. And this is exactly the gopis. They were continuing to live in the most excruciating, inconceivable, painful situation, only with the thought that Krishna will return and we have to be here for him. And I'm living for him and I'm continuing to live just by chance. If he keeps his promise and returns, I have to be here for him, to serve him and to please him. This very thought is keeping Nanda Maharaj alive. It's keeping Yashoda alive. It's keeping Subal and Sridham and Radharani and everyone alive. Because sometimes the question is asked. Bhagavan Ram had a father. Bhagavan Krishna had a father. Or has a father. Let's say had or haven't. The father of Ramachandra is King Dasharath. The father of Krishna is Nanda Maharaj. Who is a greater father? Who has more intense love for his son? Dasharath or Nanda Maharaj? We see in the pastimes of Ramayana that when his son Ram was banished to the forest because of the evil doings of Kaikeyi, I believe it was Kaikeyi, then Dasharath could not bear the pain of separation from his beloved son Ram. Suffering immensely in that separation, he died. He gave up his body. He fainted. He died. He left his body on the spot. You know this. It's in Ramayana. He died. So people say, Ram Bhaktas say, oh, just see the intense Vatsalya Prem. Just see the intense love, fatherly love, parental love of Dasharath for his son Ram. What exemplary love. What a paragon of pure love. That he has such intense attachment and love for his son that he couldn't bear a minute's separation from his son Ram. That he fainted on the floor of the palace and gave up his life errors immediately. He's the greatest possible devotee of the Lord. They say like this. And what do we say? No way. You're wrong. You're absolutely, completely wrong. Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, he is 10,000 times greater devotee than Dasharath. His son is also Bhagavan. Dasharath's son is also Bhagavan. He's the father. They're both fathers. They're both in Vatsalya Bhav. But the Vatsalya Bhav of Nanda Maharaj is so superior and so unlimited. Dasharath was suffering intense pain of separation. And once you're dead, there's no more pain. Die, that's it. Pain over. Body finished. No more relationship. The cause of the pain is the relationship. The cause of the pain is the body. If you have no body, there's no relationship. Right? I'm somebody's son. But if I die, and my body dies, I'm nobody's son. So the pain is caused by the relationship. If you get married, you have a relationship with a wife. And then what happens? You can't put two and two together? Pain is caused by let me repeat it again in case you were sleeping. Pain, the cause of the relationship is the body and pain. So when you get married, then you have a relationship. Then what happens? Pain begins. This is not a very difficult deduction. Okay, happiness, all right, happiness is there. I'm not talking about happiness now, I'm talking about pain. So Dasharath gave up his body, so the relationship with Ram was finished, and the pain was finished. Because the cause of the pain is a relationship. Nanda Maharaj has a relationship as being the father of Krishna. And that's because his body, he's the father. He's older, he's the father. He produced the child. And his child left went to Mathura for the wrestling match. And then he went on to Dwarka. I didn't see him. And he was dying in separation from his son. And he wanted to give up his body 1,000 times, million, every second he wants to die in separation. But he was thinking, because of the intensity of his love, because love is measured, the intensity and strength of love is measured by how much you're absorbed in the happiness of the beloved. Not your own peace of mind, not your own satisfaction, not your own happiness. It was beneficial for Dasharatha to die immediately because he was unhappy. He was suffering. So he died and there was no more unhappiness or suffering. That was good for him to die. This is not very deep love, thinking of yourself. Oh, I can't bear the pain of separation. I can't tolerate. Oh, my son is leaving. I must die. That dying is for your pleasure because you escaped the pain of separation. Nanda Maharaj was dying at every moment. His death, is dying a happy thing? He was so much in separation, but he was thinking, but I love my son. My son needs me. What happens if I die and my son comes back? Then how will my son feel? He'll cry. Where's my father? Who's going to embrace him when the lightning strikes and the thunder claps? Boom! And he runs into my room and jumps in my arms. Daddy, Daddy, protect me. If I die, who's going to protect him? Who's going to console him in a rainstorm and thunderstorm? And when he misbehaves, when he goes and insults some, makes faces at some older gopi and tells, when he goes to some older gopi, says, oh, Jatila, you have a nose like a frog and you have eyes like a dog, and then he makes a funny face, ha, and he runs away from that old gopi, and that old gopi comes and complains, who's going to pull Krishna's ear, and who's going to punish him, and chastise him for making fun of that old lady? I have to do it. I have to be here for him. I have to be here. I'm its father. Father has to be there for the son. Like we say, I'll be there for you. I'm there for you, through thick or thin, or this and that. So I can't die, but I can't live, but I can't die, but I can't live. I'm burning alive at every minute in separation from Krishna. I can't. The day that Krishna left Nandagram and got on the chariot and went to Mathura, from that day forward, Nanda Maharaj never ate or drank. He never entered into his palace again. His palace is full of cobwebs and muggery and spiders and dust and dirt everywhere piled up. And he didn't eat. Yashoda wasn't cooking. They weren't doing anything. They were just lying under the trees. They're lying under the Kadamba and Tamal trees and just looking up at the branches. They're lying on the ground outside in the courtyard looking up at the Kadamba tree. And Yashoda and Nanda are looking at the branches and see this Kadamba tree. Yes, remember Krishna climbed the Kadamba tree and he jumped off the Kali Kadamba with Kaliya. Oh, and he used to go to Tara Kadamba. Remember Nanda, he would go down the hill and go to Tara Kadamba and climb the Kadamba tree and play his Vamshi and call all your cows. You saw them jumping and running. Remember that? And they're just lying under the ground looking at the branch of the Kadamba tree. They're not eating. Well, how they stayed alive? How they stayed alive for 50 years so they could pick themselves up and go to Kurukshetra and meet Krishna at Kurukshetra 50 years later. Because he left when he was 11. 11 years old, he left Nandagram. And when he was 50 or 60 or so, he met them at Kurukshetra. Of course, Bhagavad Gita, that was when he was 90 or 100, much later. This is the chronology sequence. So how did they stay alive? They stayed alive because the I don't know what to call them, but the Pulindas and the gypsies and these wandering people from Bharatpur and Rajasthan, these neighboring, the people who live around here, I don't know what you call these Rajasthanis that wander around here and there with their wagons, they have some name? Banjaris. So these Banjaris that are wandering around with their wagons and whatnot, they felt compassion. Just like in this world today, if there's some kind of, what do you call it, tsunami or some kind of natural calamity, big hurricane, typhoon, or big earthquake, and thousands of people are homeless, and thousands of people have no food, then what do people do in the world? They have some massive aid world aid and people, food comes from America, or oil and grains and food relief and all this kind of thing. They're food relief, right? They bring in food to the people who have no food and no means to cook or to eat or whatever, and they feed them and care for them. But these people from Rajasthan and the neighboring area, like Kamvan, we say Kaman, we speak Kamyavan, these are all in Rajasthan. These people, they came because they're neighbors. They're just on the border of Vrindavan. They say, oh, Nanda Maharaj, the king of the whole region, he's not eating. So they would make rotis and chach. They would come and they would, like a patient in a hospital, he's too weak to lift his face. So they lift his face, and they like feeding a baby. They put some buttermilk in his mouth and put a little roti. They were force feeding them to keep them alive because they had no energy to lift up their hand to eat. They had no, why, how can we eat? We only eat after Krishna eats. First we feed our baby. Mothers and fathers feed their babies first, isn't it? Baby eats first, not the mother. Oh, you keep crying, I'm hungry. Baby first. So Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they're feeding their Nandalal, Yashodalal. But he's not there. So what? There's no reason to cook? No reason to grind flour? Or churn yogurt into butter? Or grind spices? Or sweep the floor for what? We always sweep the floor so we can see Krishna's footprints. His footprints aren't here anymore. Why sweep the floor? Just dust? Just to sweep some dust? That's not... What do we care about dust? Everywhere there's Brajaraj. We might as well lie out here on the ground. Brajaraj flows in our house. The only reason we sweep is so we can gaze at the beautiful footprints of Krishna on the floor of our house. Why do we churn this yogurt and the butter? We churn the yogurt so we can sing about Krishna and feed it to Krishna. But he's not here, so why churn? And we know, and there's no reason to sing and churn because he's not here to feed him. This is the mood of separation. If I die, the gopis are thinking, his condition of separation will be the same. Oh, the faithful beloved and truly affectionate lover think of each other's welfare even in separation. So now Krishna, of course, is revealing his heart and his mind to the gopis. He's saying, I'm indebted to you. And do you understand how much I've missed you? How much I've thought of you? How much I've remembered you? You think it's only you that are crying and dying in my separation? I've also been crying and dying in your separation. I've been locked away in Dwarka, so much embroiled and absorbed in all kinds of killing demons and fighting here and there, and politics and diplomacy and running a vast kingdom, and defending the people, the Yadavas, from attacks of enemies. You don't know. You don't know. But every day I'm worshipping Bhagavan Narayan. Because the Ishtadev, his family's Ishtadev is Narayan, Kula Devata. He said, and why am I worshipping Narayan? To protect your life. Like Sankalpa, like we can take a Sankalpa and offer the result of our Brata or our austerity to someone else. You read in Ekadasi Mahatmyam, someone may perform Ekadasi. Oh, if I receive or acquire any Sukriti or Punyafal or good benefits from performing this austerity or penance of Ekadasi, oh Bhagavan, please give it to my husband or my wife that they'll become healthy or they will become more spiritually inclined. This is called the transferring of punya, which is possible by the direction of one's sankalp. This arrangement is described in the shastras. Krishna is doing the same thing. He's in Dwarka worshipping Narayan. Esha dipo klim Narayanaya namaha. Esha dupo klim Narayanaya namaha. And he's offering agarbati and so many pujas and archanam to Narayan. And he's praying his sankalpa. O Bhagavan Narayan, O my great lovers, my great devotees Radhika and all the Brajagopis, they're dying in separation from me in Vrindavan. Please protect their lives. You're the Rakhi, you're the protector. Rakhi Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rakhi Ke. He says, if Krishna protects one, no one can kill him. And if Krishna wants to kill him, no one can protect him. So, hey Bhagavan, this is your nature. Because Krishna is not Bhagavan. He's not thinking I'm Bhagavan. This is Naralila. He's thinking I'm Dwarkadish. So he's praying to Bhagavan, hey, you're that Rakhi. You're that Narayan, you're that Rakhi, you're that protector. So please protect my beloved gopis. Then Krishna says, by the Shakti, by the potency of Lord Narayan, I come to Vrindavan. I actually come there from this distant country every day to meet you. And I sport with you in various ways. But you think that it's sporty. You think it's a vision. You think, oh, because when someone is really separated from their beloved, they can see that. They can see that person. They're thinking so deeply, and they may look, they may see some shadow or see some light or someone else, or someone may come to visit them, and they look up quickly, oh, you've come! They may mistake you to be someone else. And one example pops in our mind is Kamsa in Mathura and Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He had two wives, I forget, Prapti and Supti or something like that. I'll forget the name, but something like this. And one evening time, and of course, Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna and Balaram, that Krishna and Balaram are going to come here and kill me. I'm going to be killed by Krishna, the eighth son of Vasudev. He's going to kill me. It's been predicted. So he's always thinking, Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram. Because every time he sends one of his associates and allies to Vrindavan to kill Krishna, they come back, or they don't come back. They don't come back, only the bad news comes back. The friend doesn't come back, just the bad news. That guess what? Agasura is dead, Putin is dead, Bakasura is dead, this one's dead, Keshi's dead, they're all dead. And he said, who killed him? Oh, who killed Pralambasura? Balaram. Who killed this one? Krishna. So he's always thinking, Krishna killed this friend, Balaram killed that friend. So he's always thinking, oh, Krishna, Balaram, Krishna, Balaram. One evening, he was sitting in his room, in his royal quarters, and his two wives came to visit him. It was around sunset. The lighting was not very much clear lighting. And there was a power cut back, so there was no electricity. No. This is 5,000 years ago. So it was dusk, so visibility was not very clear. So he was thinking, Kamsa was just sitting on his bed thinking, Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram. Then the door of his room, of his chambers, bed chambers, opened up, and his two wives came in. And one was wearing a blue sari, and one was wearing a yellow sari. And they both had black hair, kind of wavy black hair like this going down. Was loose. He was in his reverie of remembering, of constantly dwelling in fear, constantly meditating in fear of the appearance and advent of Krishna and Balaram. He turned and he looked and he saw these two humans, ladies walking in, and he saw this yellow and this blue. Krishna Balaram! Krishna Balaram! Krishna Balaram! Guards! 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 Chokidar! Guards! Guards! Help! Help! He thought that, although it was his wives, one in yellow sari, one in blue sari, he thought it was Krishna and Balaram coming to kill him in his bedroom. So that intense fear, he had a sport, he had a vision. It wasn't Krishna and Balaram, it was his wives. But due to his intense fear, he was absorbed and he saw this sport. He imagined that sight was actually the vision of Krishna and Balaram. And gopis were the same way. They would actually sometimes see it. Another gopi would wear a yellow sari and a yellow veil, chunari. And then she's singing, oh, Krishna, Krishna. Then she sees the gopi and she says, oh, it's Krishna. And Krishna's come. And she's thinking, it's a spurti. And she's thinking, she's looking at some gopi with a yellow dress and thinking this is Krishna. But actually, and she's thinking, oh, it's Krishna, but actually Krishna's coming. So Krishna's telling, I'm in Dwarka, and by Narayan's power, by the power and blessings of Narayan, I'm able to come every day and meet you. You're thinking of me, you're meditating on my pastimes, and meditating on me, Nam Rup Gun Leela, and I come there, Sakshat Hari, Sakshat Darshan. It's real. I'm really there in front of you. I'm really dancing with you. I'm really embracing you. But you think it's sporty. You think it's a vision. It's just a meditation. But it's real. Don't you remember this? So he's telling them this at Kurukshetra. You think it's only a vision. Oh my beloved, oh my Dhyata, oh Dhyata Radha. It is my good fortune that your love for me is unlimited and incomparable. This prema will quickly pull me back to you in Vrindavan. In just a few days, after killing the remaining enemies of the Yadavas, I will return to Vrindavan. Consider that I've already come. It's very interesting. 50 years ago, he said the same thing. He said, I'm going to Mathura with Akura, and I'll be back at Parso, day after tomorrow. I'll be back. And then and 50 years later, he's meeting them in Kurukshetra. I have a few more demons. I'll come back in a couple of days. And the gopis are thinking, well, wait a minute, haven't we heard this before? I will return to Vrindavan. Consider that I've already come. And of course, this time he did come back. Firstly, he's saying, I'm coming every day to meet with you. It's not a vision. I'm really there. Try to understand that. And then, yes, I will come back. I promised before, and I am coming back. You're thinking it's sporty, but I'm coming every day. But now I'm going to come back again, and you'll see me directly. And I'll spend some time with you, and then we'll all go back to the spiritual world together. And that's describing Gopal Champu.